Good evening. This is Alan Bobroff with my usual weekly program, Community Watch, when I own in on various synagogue communities around London. And tonight I'm really delighted to have with me North Hendon Adas Yisrael Synagogue. And representing them, we have Mr. Henry Erreich and his son-in-law, Julian Mora.
Hello.
Good evening, Henry.
Good evening.
I'm particularly pleased to welcome them because it gives me an opportunity of going a little further right in our approach to Judaism this tonight than we have been so far. So here we are, freshly out of Pesach, and ready to talk about a somewhat more orthodox synagogue. In fact, my last broadcast, which was before Pesach, I had liberal synagogues. So I've gone from one extreme, not quite to the other, but quite a long way. So this evening, the reason I asked you, first of all, let me tell you, listeners, that North Hendon Adas Yisrael Synagogue may be a very orthodox synagogue and a very observant synagogue, but they are heavily into IT. And they're probably the most sophisticated IT synagogue that I've yet met, because they have wonderful websites. They have the Sedra is talked about every week, and I think Henry, tell us something about your approach to this.
We decided early on, when the opportunity arose to start a website, that we felt that this was a way of meeting people over the airwaves. Communicating with members over the airways and setting up a system where people could log in, see what we were doing and take it from there. What used to happen was that people who came to shul, they knew what was going on in the shul. We used to send out a magazine with the title you've got there once every 6 months, and that gave us the times of governing and the times of services for 6 months, but that was about all that we had. From one yontif to the next, we felt that there was a need to communicate with our members on a weekly basis, and even more frequently should the need arise. I started a newsletter which we started posting on the notice board in the synagogue, and then Julian took over and we set up a website. We've been going 5 years, the newsletter and the website, and very successful at that.
Because you're an IT professional, aren't you, Julian?
Yes, indeed. I think, luckily for us, I think this evening you brought in an IT professional.
Yes, it was rather fortunate, I have to tell you, because Julian saved, I was going to say saved our bacon, but that would not have been appropriate. certainly saved us this evening, because the studio has been closed down over Yom Tov, and I'm the first one in. I had a little difficulty getting it all going, getting it all set up, and fortunately, because it's all based, computer-based, Julian was able to come round the table and come to my aid and get us going, so thank you, Julian.
The failure of JCOM Radio.
It certainly was tonight, but hopefully we're going out loud and clear, and I hope that we've got lots of members of your synagogue listening to us, that they will in fact communicate with us on the listen again button. Now, Henry, tell me about how the synagogue started. When did it?
1948, Rabbi Dr. Schoenfeld, who founded Hasmonean School and other schools within the Jewish Secondary Schools movement, felt that there was a need for a Orthodox synagogue in North Hendon. I mean, we are furthest over from all the Orthodox synagogues as far as, you know, geographically, to the north, and he felt that the school's ethos included the need for a synagogue, and he set up a synagogue. There were hardly, you'd call it, just about a million of people around, but he felt the need for that, and basically they started by using the Beit HaMidrash of the school, or the Hasmonean grammar school. There were services at weekends, hardly during the week to start with. That came later. They did have a rabbi. The first rabbi was Rabbi Dr. Alexander Kalava. the membership grew, as the membership grew, it felt the need arose for building a purpose-built building for the shul. That came about 45 years ago. The building was set up within the grounds of the school, still serves officially as the chapel of the school, but other than that, we have gained our independence over the years, and we run as an autonomous shul within the grounds of the school, within the Jewish Secondary Schools movement, and within the Union of Orthodox Hebrew Congregations.
Now, the Union of Orthodox Hebrew Congregations, is that a completely separate entity from all other synagogue organisations?
It's the organisation which is somewhat to the right of the Federation.
Right.
Comprises about 45 to 50 shuls, shtibuls, bata midrashim in north and northwest London. From what we call, from our brand of Orthodoxy, to the very, very far right Hasidim and so on and so forth. We take on the organisation which comprises of the Kedatsia Kashrus Authority.
Ah, so it's Kedatsia who provides Kashrus.
We take on the Rabbonim of the Union as being the Dayanim if we need to go to a Din Torah and things like that.
So but they have the Beit Din?
Yes, yes, yes. And in fact our Rabbi David Cohen is called in to one of the Beit Dins which sit in northwest London under their auspices. So, although he's not a Dayan as such, he sits in on cases because he has expertise on civil matters. And since he's been in the area, he's been called in quite often now.
So you deal with marriage and divorce?
Well, yes, the organisation deals with everything.
Yeah. And it has a Beit Din in exactly the
same. Yeah.
So really, you know, there seem to be several Beit Dins around UK.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it necessary?
There are certain people who won't go to the United Synagogue Beit Din, and they won't go to the Federation Beit Din, and they'll want somebody, a Beit Din, whose Rabbonim are of their own persuasion. It doesn't mean that the results will be any different. And if you go to an Orthodox Beit Din, a Union, Federation or United, you'll probably get the same results. But people feel more at home within their own organisation. Or people will actually go to the other organisation because they don't want to be on a Beit Din or in front of a Beit Din or familiar face.
I see. Well, one can understand that to a certain extent. Coincidentally, I was a pupil at the Hasmonean in 1948. I think it was 1948. I can't remember if it was 1948. It must have been 48, 49.
Yeah, that's what I should have said.
Because I left when I took my 11th class. It wasn't a good move, I have to tell you. I should have stayed. I was getting a better education there, and I was happier there as a child at Hasmonean than I was in the grammar school that I went to.
Well, if you left 11th class, you went to the Hasmonean prep school.
No, I didn't. I was at Hasmonean grammar school. I was in that building. And I remember it well, extremely well. And it was Mr. Stanton was the headmaster.
Yes, yes. W.W. Stanton.
That's it.
Yes, yes.
So, in
those days, Rabbi Schoenfeld.
I remember him well.
He ran the shul, basically.
He was a very impressive looking gentleman.
You couldn't sign a cheque without his authority, and he was the one who ran the shul, basically ran all the admin of the shul from his office. Over the years, we gained our UGI, and then unfortunately he passed away, but we've been independent for quite some time now.
But you're independent of any other Adas Yisrael synagogue?
Yeah, we are.
So you're just a single unit
there.
You obviously have a big community atmosphere.
Yeah.
Tell me something about that.
Well, when you say serving, I like to say serving the whole community. So we're a single unit serving the entire community. So we've made it our business to make sure that we encourage as many people to feel as welcome as they can feel in any shul. One thing that must be quite difficult, certainly for many people who maybe have gone to Hasmonean,
yeah,
is to step foot back into Hasmonean as such. And I find that that sort of generation, because we've had independence for so long and the boys haven't really spent time inside our synagogue, but that's now disconnected. And when people come into the shul, they're extremely surprised by a number of factors. I think number one would be how friendly the atmosphere is. And how it feels like a shul. They always say that, it feels like a real shul. Lots of people certainly like to come to us over Yom Tov because it's a shul. But it more importantly, and very recently, we've really put a big emphasis on welcoming people and making them feel at home. So no matter what background they're from, they shouldn't feel that they're not welcome inside the shul, which I think people have a preconception maybe of.
Right. Well, if you don't mind, if we just stop there for a moment, because you know, we're not entirely independent. We rely to a certain extent on our advertisers to support us. So I think it would be only fair if I played a few commercials at this stage. I took a commercial break, and then we'll come back and talk about that in a moment. Well, we're back. We were talking about degrees of orthodoxy before. And I find this a little difficult. Obviously, I can see the difference between liberal, reform, united sort of comes somewhere in the middle. Federation isn't that different from united. I mean, there is really no great difference. I was brought up in a federation synagogue, and the only difference between us and the united synagogue on the other side of the park was their building was grander than ours. We had something like a little hut, but there didn't seem to be much difference between the service. And they had a ladies' gallery. And you have a ladies' gallery as well.
Yes, we do, indeed.
But you don't have a machitza.
The machitza is made up of iron bars. It's not what you would regard as 100% opaque, and there's no curtain as such. And therefore, you can see, if you bother to look up, you can see who's there and who isn't. Not everyone would agree that that's exactly the right thing, but that's the way the shul was built under the previous rabbi, and that's the way it's carried on.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you get this situation, certainly in the United Synagogue, where the ladies who are married wear hats. The ladies who aren't married, the single available ones, don't wear hats. Now, the young men who are married wear talisim. Those aren't, don't wear talisim. So it's almost as if they can spot each other, they can sort of pick each other out and take their pick, which I'm sure isn't quite how you see it.
That's not what goes on in shul. within our our target community,
yeah,
you'll find far more women who actually wear a head covering the whole time. They'll wear a scarf or a shekel, and not just put on a hat when they come to shul.
Right.
Amongst the men, you'll find some who actually come to shul always in a black hat, and others who will only come in a kippah, but most of the men within the shul will wear a kippah all the time, even at work and that sort of thing.
As I'm sure you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
You asked about degrees of orthodoxy. I think that's the way we can measure it. There isn't much difference between an Orthodox person within the United Synagogue and an Orthodox person within the Federation.
I think there is any difference.
Or within our shul, there isn't, because nowadays a lot of it's come together.
Yeah.
And whereas in the past, you would regard somebody in an Adras shul as somebody who wears a black hat all the time and would not come to a service without his hat. Whilst when the boys go off to yeshiva and things like that, the hats become meaningless and it will be a kippah. The type of kippah is irrelevant. We don't even look for that, whether it's kippah tzrugah or black kippah or velvet kippah. That's not relevant as far as we're concerned.
So long as they don't wear a leather one on Yom Kippur.
Even a leather one, yeah.
That always amuses me when I see some somebody wearing a leather they've got plimsolls and they've got leather kippah in Yom Kippur.
We do seem to have a trend in our shuls in the summer that a number of the men wear straw hats, which I find quite interesting as well.
So that's nice.
Nice, very nice.
But on degrees of orthodoxy, there isn't much difference.
No, but surely one is either orthodox and accepts everything. And accepts and follows all the din, or you don't follow it all.
I think it's governed by the stringencies, the chumrot that you put on your observance, or the kulot, the leniencies that you put on. You might find people in our shul are more stringent in certain areas than in other shuls, but that's probably about it.
When I was talking to the gentleman from the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue in Lauderdale Road, the Sephardi, he said, the thing about Sephardi Jews is that we only have one synagogue, one Sephardi organization, and that's it. We don't have all different strands. And therefore, everybody is accepted, and if then some people are not that observant and some are more observant, there's nobody looks down on the person who is less observant. I mean, I don't know whether you remember that wonderful sketch that was written, I think it was written by Marty Feldman, and it's featured John Cleese, Ronnie Barker and Ronnie Corbett standing in a line. I'm better than him.
I'm upper class.
Yes, I'm upper class. I'm better than him. And it went down to Ronnie Corbett, who said that I know my place, because he was at the bottom. And I sometimes feel that this also is reflected in the sort of degrees of Judaism, because there are more Orthodox Jews who look right down upon anybody who is not totally and completely observant.
By the way, you mentioned Marty Feldman. It's just an interest to note that his father was one of the founder members of our shul. Well, one thing we don't do, and Julian will elaborate about that, I think, we don't look down on anyone. Yeah, we've got all types coming into the shul. As secretary, I get phone calls from people who say, I've moved into your area, I'd like to come to your shul, but I've never been to an adult shul before. Like as if that means that they have to put on horns and things like that. And I say, very often I'll say to them, the only difference you'll find in our shul, as opposed to typically in our synagogue shul, is that all our seats in the men's gallery, in the men's shul, face the front of the shul. And that's about it, you see. And
right.
We use the same siddur, the same prayer book, the same chamashin, the same books as any United Synagogue uses. So feel free to come. And we've attracted these people over the years. The people who used to walk past the front door on their way to Hendon United or Kinloss, those
now
are the
come
people,
in instead of
well,
walking past.
We try to attract them, yes.
Tell me, Julia, tell me more about this.
Well, I moved to the area about 10 years ago, and I've seen a dramatic change even in the last 10 years. We do have now a real mix of people, and when I mean mix of people, I don't just mean from people who are not religious in any way, shape, or form to people who you would consider in your framework here very religious.
Yeah.
But also, we have a Lubavitch member who is actually a member of the board. We have an ex-serving member of the board from last year who is a Sephardi fellow, who's also a member of a Sephardi shul as well. So we have a real mix of people from all different backgrounds as well. And I think you'll find in certainly in our shul, I think, and possibly even a misconception from people who have come from less from backgrounds, and I certainly come from a less from background, is that you somehow you'll walk into an Orthodox synagogue and it'll be very daunting and everyone will be all eyes on you and all those sorts of things, whereas it's just really not quite that way, and it certainly isn't that way in our shul. And we've put out a lot of programs. I mean, the whole reason we put out every 6 months we put out a program of seasonal events is that we look to try and encompass all areas of the community. So recently we had a winter program, and we tried to put particular emphasis on the women of the community and make sure they're catered for, because a lot of communities seem to forget certain elements of their own community. We spent a lot of time this last year on the children. We started, after I think maybe an absence of 10 or 11 years, a children's service, which didn't exist for a long time in our shul. But we also put in place what's called a children's kiddush, which is just a 5-minute Vartera or story. Maybe one of the ladies or one of the men will read a story or a Vartera, and then they'll have a nash bag and they'll make kiddush and the kids will nash on that, and the younger children come. That's it. Nothing more complicated than that. And then we followed that, as the children have got older, with this children's service. So we're trying to sort of build our community from the bottom up and building it, you know, building it with lots of different programs. We try to communicate a lot better. I mean, one of the things that I did when I joined the board about six or 7 years ago now, which was I put out to the existing board at that time, that one of our biggest problems, I think the biggest problem in any shul, is good PR, is about how you present yourselves. The end goal is the same in any shul. People should come and daven. But to how that's dressed is very important. And we started off because my father-in-law had done for many years a newsletter, a weekly newsletter that went on the board. We thought, well, what about just archiving those newsletters on a website that people will be able to access? And then, as you know, in the last few years with the explosion of broadband, people, and certainly a lot of our, what I would term silver surfers from the shul, but have a lot of people who are connected, were finding that the connection was a very real connection. The good communication was really helping some of the older members who maybe couldn't make it to shul every week, and some who can't make it at all, to be able to find out what's going on, to get updates, text updates or emails about Mazel Tovs and such like. So I think that's the way we've helped build the community.
That's very interesting. I'd like to talk about some of these events that you've got organised, because they're very interesting, very unusual for a synagogue, and surprised me in particular, since it's an Orthodox, very conservative synagogue. So, if we could do that after we take another short break, then we'll talk about those. This is Alan Bobroff with my weekly program, Community Watch, and this evening I've got two very interesting guests. They are Henry Ehreich and Julian Mora of the North End of the Dust Yisrael Shul. I just call it a shul, not a synagogue. We were talking about the various activities which they get up to. And you would think that they were mainly shiurs and very learned educational things and people going there for learning, but not a bit of it. That's not all they do. I've got 2008 Spring Summer Events program here. We've got a football tournament, five-a-side inter-shul football tournament at the Mill Hill Power League, paintballing. Now that's interesting. Somebody make sure the paint's kosher before.
Absolutely. Certain colour, yeah.
Then ladies and older girls Oneg Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Come and join the women of for a fabulous Oneg Shabbos with delicious food. There had to be food, didn't
there? Let me say about that particular event, because I think that's very extra special. In fact, so special, a lot of the men complained, felt that we were being quite chauvinist that we were providing this for the ladies. What we do, we have an events organiser who is Alexia Lyons, and she's from, I think, a company called Lex Events, but she's also a member of the shul. and she puts on a number of events for us, and this one in particular is amazing, and the ladies absolutely love it, where we take our newly refurbished Beit HaMidrash, and she basically takes it over, and she drapes beautiful silk cloth all over, and she turns the Beit HaMidrash into just a bit of a paradise for the ladies, a bit of an indulgence for the ladies for one evening, because you know, they deserve it, and they have a beautiful buffet, a great speaker. We normally bring in speakers from outside the community, somebody with something very interesting to say, very topical, and it's just a wonderful evening for the ladies, and it's one of a number of things that we try to focus on. We try to make sure that we're providing events for different elements of the community. As far as the football event, it's very interesting. It's an intershul football, and we ran this, I think we ran this last year, and there were about 11, 12, maybe 13 different synagogues from around the area.
What are they all?
Not Hadass synagogues, all different types. So we had independent ones, we had the United Synagogue ones, Sephardi shuls. So we had quite a mix of different people. We did come second, I might add. I can't remember who won, but we came second. So we did quite.
How about the Reform?
I don't think any of them entered, to be honest. But a lot of our publicity is gratefully, shall we say, received. We're very thankful to a lot of the independents and the United Synagogues and the other shuls around the area who work very closely together, and will take all of our advertising material, and they'll put those up on their boards and things like that. So it's much easier to get those types to come along and support an event that we're running than it is others. Paintballing this year, I think last year they did go-karting. Unfortunately, I can't really speak to either of them because I haven't attended either of them. I have a bad back, so I'm not allowed to, I'm afraid. I think I'd want to get in and have a go. Yeah. So. But yeah, there's a number of events. One of the nicest things that we've done in the last few years, I think it was a bit prohibitive years ago because of the cost, but now the costs have come down considerably. We run, or we allow people to run during the winter months, hot kiddush. When we have a hot kiddush, interestingly enough...
What is a hot kiddush?
We'll have cholent and kugel.
Oh, is it? Okay.
As opposed to your normal kiddush, cold kiddush. And what's interesting about that one is that we've had it reported by the person who runs the kiddush that we have about a 30% increase in our numbers on the weeks when the hot kiddush is run. Which is interesting. But we accept, and the Rav accepts this as well, it's an interesting take, but we accept the fact that there are things peripheral to the davening that will be an encouragement to bring people through the doors,
mm-hmm.
bring them to a kiddush. We run at the same time, a couple of times each season, we run what's called a learning Shabbos, where we have an early morning Shabbos morning minyan and a later morning minyan, and we bring them together, and we have we daven together like a unified minyan. And then we have two guest speakers to speak. Short speeches, 20 minutes, 25 minutes each. And then after that we have a hot kiddush. And it's those sorts of things that bring an added flavour to your community. It's not just off the shore. It should be, but we're human and, you know, we want something with a bit of flavour.
I think you're right. I think you're right. It makes the whole thing a much more interesting.
Yeah.
Experience, and it's not so, not so dry.
Absolutely right. I mean, one of the programs that I personally now have taken over, which is the Fathers and Children's program, obviously one, and you may have heard of the program that runs in Northwest London. One of the things that's interesting about that is that people have said to me, okay, so you learn, the father learns with the children, and after that time you give them a chocolate. And I said, yeah, we do that every week, and we have prizes as well. But after the first week, they're not coming back for the chocolate. They're not coming back for the prizes. They're coming back because they're spending quality time with their father. And so it's all about how things are dressed, both for the children and for the membership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very important.
May I introduce here a few words about our rabbi?
Oh yes, yes. Please do.
In fact, interesting as it may seem, which are getting together this evening, our rabbi had his profile in the JC.
I read
last
it.
Week.
I have a copy of it in front of me.
On the community pages, and it was very well.
I had to go looking for it. I expected a big full page. But
Our rabbi's background, I'll say a few words about him. His name is Rabbi David Cohen. His grandfather was Diane Broomfield, one of the stalwarts of the London Beth Din in about two or three decades ago. His grandmother was the famous Dr. Judith Grunfeld, who was one of the first pupils of the Beth Gauper movement in Poland before the war, and came over to England and became headmistress of the Avita School and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
He himself grew up in northwest London, went to Houghton Mears School, went to Menorah Primary beforehand, took a degree in computer science at Imperial, and when he married, his wish was to continue his Jewish studies and went off to Israel for 12 years and studied that time in 12 years. At that time, my father-in-law, Rabbi David Cooper, who had served the shul for about 45 years as rabbi, decided that time had come to retire, and we placed adverts in the Jewish press, and Rabbi Cohen answered the advert and joined us about 6 months later. And when it comes to all these programs that we offer the shul, he is actually the biggest fan of all these programs. Although you won't see him necessarily at the 10-pin bowling alley, but he's the first one to support these programs, because he feels that whereas you want to get together for the davening in shul, you want to get together for shiurim, but the social aspect of the shul is created by things like kiddushim and the events which we run on a regular basis, and that brings people together. He also maintains you don't see people walking around the shul so much to have conversations with their friends, because we have the opportunities after the services, not every week, but at least every Shabbat Mavokim before the Rosh Chodesh, to have a kiddush and to get together and socialise. And he feels that it's extremely important for the cohesion of the show.
He's obviously a fairly young man.
He is in his mid-40s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He looks a bit younger in that photo.
Yeah, well, he's in his mid-40s.
There's a lack of grey hair and a beard, I think it was.
Yeah. Hopefully we won't bring in the grey hairs.
Either that or it's Grecian 2000.
He is somebody who's very much in favour of when he gives shiurim, they will be very much on the lines of halacha, how to, if you don't know how to conduct yourself, you're lost. And for instance, he's very much a supporter of Shemitah, of the fallow year for the land in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a whole series through the winter of shiurim, how even people in Kutzlaret, in direct diaspora, have to conduct themselves in the Shemitah year. And I said to him at the end of the series, I think there must be no other shul in the whole of the diaspora where the members should be so well versed in what's going on in the Shemitah in Israel as our shul, because of the series of shiurim that he's given. Another thing which is very much in his favour, he is in touch with a lot of the eminent rabbis in Israel, those who are looked up to in the Orthodox world as the leaders of our community, the leaders of the generation. And he, having studied there, and he is very much in with them. And if he has a problem which he is unable to solve himself, he will immediately pick up the phone and phone one of these rabbis in Israel and get the answer. And very much in his favour and very much helpful to our shul.
I think also I'd like to just add that on our website that we run, we have an online audio section, and we have a lot of shiurim from guest speakers. We have some fantastic guest speakers who come in regularly. Just recently, as an example of this, the Rav gave a pre-Pesach shiur for ladies. He also gave one for men on Shabbos, but he gave one for ladies prior to that. And he had that digitally recorded, and we took that and we placed that on the website. And then he provided a complete breakdown of what one does when Pesach follows Shabbos, as it did this year.
Yes, that must have been quite good. How was that supposed to be organised?
Well, he provided, I think, about a 21 or 22 point guide, And interestingly enough, we provided that to obviously our email list, and we have a large email list. And I got emails back from those people's parents because they'd obviously sent them on to other communities, and they were asking permission, can we please distribute this in our show? Because it was an extremely well-defined point-by-point guide, giving different methods, different opportunities to do different things. You can use this method or this method or this method. This is our preferred, but you may use it this way. All these types.
Because basically, you couldn't prepare food because it was Shabbos.
Well, I think probably one of the biggest.
So how was one supposed to prepare the Seder? I mean, I'm interested.
Now you prepare the Seder on the Friday. No. And in fact, I thought the next opportunity that we will have to discuss this matter, that when Shabbos will be the day before Pesach is in 30 years, it doesn't come that frequently. But obviously the Shabbos before, in fact the Friday was to be regarded as the day before the Yom Tov. The Shabbos was sort of a no man's land. Nothing happened really. You had to have everything ready beforehand. You could still eat bread at breakfast on Friday night. But after that, it had to be.
But how were you supposed to deal with getting rid of the chametz?
Everything. The chametz was the search for chametz was on the Thursday night. The burning of the chametz was on Friday morning. Everything a day earlier than usual. And the Shabbos was a sort of a hiatus in between.
But breakfast on Shabbos.
If you could have challah.
Okay. Yeah. So you had your challah. Then what did you do?
Your lunch was a Pesach.
Yes, I know. But what did you do with the rest of the challah?
To be crude, you put it down the loop.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This is an interesting point, because this is where the Rav really came into his own, because he provides different methods for different people. So some people would use, he actually had the local bakeries provide a special type of bread pitta that was basically non-crumbly, that wouldn't have the crustacean on the top. And he had them provide those for people who wanted to use that. People who had young children, maybe grandchildren in their home at that time, there was another method which was to use, which we don't, Ashkenazim don't use on Pesach, egg matzahs, but you can use them before. And there was a method to use egg matzahs on the Shabbos, so that you then could go in and you didn't have to have any, quote, chomates in your home coming into Shabbos. So there was a number of ways of getting around that, but the Rav was. Is amazing in the fact that he provides all the information that people require, and it seems to sort of spread beyond our own community as well.
Well, I'd like to take a little break there, if we may. Well, this is Alan Bobroff with my weekly Community Watch program, and we're talking with North Hendon Adas Yisrael Synagogue in Henry Erich. His son-in-law, Julian Mora. A very interesting talk so far. We were discussing the problems of making the Seder when Shabbos is the day before Seder, as we had this year. You were talking about egg matzahs, which I was fascinated by. Could you just repeat what we were saying?
Yeah, there is a type of matzah which is where the dough is instead of being kneaded with water, is kneaded with eggs or fruit juice or honey actually, which Sephardim may use the whole of Passover, but Ashkenazim wouldn't use them beyond the time which was normally allocated for the end of eating chametz on the day before Pesach. So it was around 10:30.
How can something be kosher for Pesach for the Sephardim and not for the Ashkenazi?
It's very simple. We have pulses, kipniot, which Sephardim eat.
Yes.
We have rice, which Sephardim eat on Pesach, and Ashkenazim don't.
Why?
This is a tradition we have for many years, and the rabbis believe that if you made a dough out of the pulses, or if the pulses became wet, they would ferment. And as you know, the fermentation of the chametz is what's forbidden on Passover. And therefore you'll find a lot of products, the goods which are manufactured in Israel, marked on the shelves in our stores before Passover, and they'll be marked on the packaging only for those who eat kipniot, in other words only Sephardim, and on the shelves as well. Now, unfortunately, people make a mistake and they buy a lot of stuff which is on sale in the shop, Ashkenazim, which they shouldn't be eating on Passover. But that's the majority of the population of Israel, and therefore the majority of the products which are made in Israel are made very much to serve the Sephardim, but Ashkenazim are forbidden. And that's
somebody told me that raspberries aren't kosher.
The problem with berries as such is not the kashrut of the berries, it's the fact that they can be infested with flies and things like that. It's very often said, that, for instance, about the lettuce which we use for Mara at the same time.
Yes, I saw this in your
and the rabbi was particular to go out and find a brand of lettuce which was available at Tesco, which was supposedly that if you washed it under the tap, any infestation was there would go. It would be a shame if you're doing the mitzvah of the Mara at the Seder night and at the same time eating a load of flies and creepy crawlies, which are strictly forbidden. You'd lose the benefit of the mitzvah, and you do a sin by eating all these flies.
We actually used watercress this year. Is that all right?
Watercress people use for the carapace, which is the dipping before the
Mara.
When it comes to Mara, the horseradish and the lettuce, and that's about as far as our traditions go. Some people will tell you chicory is okay, or other products, other vegetables, but we very much stay to our traditional horseradish and lettuce.
I'll tell you a funny story about answers. I ordered a weekly delivery from Tesco's online. And I stuck on it, because I live alone, and I stuck a couple of boxes of matzahs. So they arrive, and I pick them up, and I put them in the cupboard, and as I'm putting them away, I see on them, it says, not for Passover. There's no sugar here. This is the week before Pesach, I bought matzahs, and they've sent them not for Passover, so this is crazy. So I put them in a bag, and I go down to Tesco's, I say, look, this is wrong. I want matzahs, but they should be for Passover. Not, you know, it's Passover next week. What are you sending these for? Very sorry, and we'll give you a refund. So they gave me a refund for two boxes of matzahs, £2.70.
What are you
going to
say?
So I went to the kosher counter, the kosher shelves, and I got two kosher boxes of matzahs, kosher for Pesach. And I went to the till. 47p each. Now, is that sugar or not?
Well, I think it's Tesco and any other supermarkets, they're bringing people in. These are their loss leaders, where they'll admit they're not making any profit.
But they're getting people in to buy their Pesach stuff.
Yes,
well, we had a very nice series of adverts from Asda, which we were playing all the way, all the time before Pesach and during Pesach, during the Cholamoed, when we were broadcasting, and it was because Asda were advertising their kosher range, their Pesach range, and we played it every 15 minutes. Thank you, Asda, for your support.
I think one thing that's interesting you mentioned on the newsletter that we put out each week, the Robert spent quite an enormous amount of time because he recognised the fact that people spend obviously a lot of time preparing the lettuce for Seder night. It takes quite a while depending on what you buy. I got a number of emails back from the information I'd sent out.
Incidentally, you may have got emails. We haven't had one message from member of your community, which I'm a little disappointed with. I'm rather hoping actually that we might get some comments from maybe people who don't subscribe to Orthodoxy, who might like to have a little bit of a...
They're probably very interested in what we're saying.
Okay.
So they're
sorry, carry on with the lettuce.
But basically, the Rob went to a number of supermarkets to try and, first of all, source this type of lettuce. But I got a number of emails, interestingly, back. And we obviously have this good communication with our community. But I got an email back from somebody in Liverpool who has a connection with the shul. And he said, well, we've bought romaine lettuce, so is this better than romaine? And this comes back to the age-old question you were asking before, which is about levels of orthodoxy.
Yeah.
It isn't better or worse, it's about this, in this particular instance. This particular lettuce, this different lettuce that we're able to use, only requires washing under the tap. and didn't then require checking, because the way that the insects, if there are insects, and there are insects indeed even on these lettuces, they fall straight off if washed. Whereas on the romaine, they grow on the inside and they need scrubbing off. And so the Rob was looking for a way, a mechanism for making life easier, you know, on Erev Pesach for the community. And I think that's the difference. You know, we talk about the detail and how detailed people are, but there's a reason for that, because and our Rob will look for the best, but also the easiest way for people to make life easier for other people as well. I think people understand that. As a level of orthodoxy that doesn't necessarily say we're better, it just simply says we're looking for something that is correct, exactly 100% correct, but makes life a lot easier. And the Rob was went to a number of supermarkets, spent the whole day going around trying to find source of these for the community.
Sorry, Henry, you were about to say
May I use the opportunity to plug our Bar's filler, our husband, should
we? Please do.
Mr. Tolly Rose, who has made some recordings in his youth, which can be found on commercial records. He's been with us for about 3 or 4 years. He is by profession a solicitor. He comes from a very musical family in Manchester. His father and uncle and brothers are all very musical. We've had him for about 3 or 4 years. He takes the services on Shabbos every 2 weeks, plus if there's a simcha bar mitzvah or something like that. Has become very much part of our community. So much so that when he went to Manchester to be with his parents over the first 2 days of Passover, people were worried that the service would be completely different. Fortunately enough, we had one of the lay members of the shul to take the services, which didn't detract at all. But we find that he's very much part of the community. And one of the things we've established with his blessing is an occasional, what we've known as the Karlebach Friday night, using the tunes of Rabbi Shlomo Karlebach for the Kabbalah Shabbat service, which we have now 3 or 4 times in the winter. He is a proponent of this method of Kabbalah Shabbat. He knows all the tunes. When we were looking for somebody to take these services, he said, "Why don't you ask me? I know it all the tunes and everything like that." So that's one of the plus points we've had in the last few years that he's been with us. Another thing I'd like to mention is a completely different aspect of the shul is our tzedakah fund. We have, people wouldn't believe it really, but even within North West London, the families who don't make ends meet. The husband may be in a job, but when it comes to Yom Tov and so on, they find it difficult when it comes to the High Holy Days or Pesach. All the extras cause a difficulty. We have a fund which people subscribe to during the year, and we're able to help these families, whether single parent families, widows, parents, families where one of the partners is, one of the husband or the wife is as well. We find that as an Orthodox shul, I know other shuls do it as well, but we find that to be a very important.
As we've got very little time left, I'd like to just tell you we do have some listeners out there. We've got a message from Barry who says, "Enjoying the program, interesting stuff, we are out here." Another one from Jeremy of Potter's Bar: "Should we be using kosher for Pesach water as they do in Israel for washing our lettuce?" I'll answer that in a minute. And one from North London at us: "We'd just like to express our thanks to the shul as portrayed by Henry and Julia, and add that it is support like this that allows our community to flourish." Isn't that nice? Can you just very quickly answer about the water?
2 or 3 years ago, we put up an April Fool's joke in the shul that people had to tie an old sock around the tap to catch the broke pieces which are coming out of the water tap. That's what we think about the water problem.
Yes, I think it's very funny. I have to say, well, we are in fact coming to the end of our programme. I'd like to thank you both for coming in and providing me with a very interesting, very fascinating programme, actually. I'm delighted to learn about the shul. I think it sounds a wonderful shul. I wish you well, and I wish all your community well.
Thank you very much.
And
if people want to know a bit more about the shul, they can go to our website.
Indeed.
North Hendon.
I suggest you do. It's a very, very interesting website. It's an extremely good website.
Northhendon.co.uk.
Excellent.
Got my plug in.
Right. Well, with that, I'm afraid we're going to have to say goodnight. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And
we are
going now to the J-Jam program, which is pre-recorded. So if anybody's out there wants to try and call in,